Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of M365 Voice. My name is Mike Marani.
I'm Sarah Hasse.
And I'm Antonio Mayo.
And today we are going to talk a bit about Microsoft DLP. And we have a question here. I'm going to read it off the screen. What are all the data loss prevention tools in Microsoft 365? And how does DLP work in Microsoft Teams?
I feel like I'm going to start a stopwatch, Antonio, and say, let's go. 20 okay. minutes. Cover okay. that.
This is my world. So, yes, I can intro the topic, and then you guys throw in whatever you want.
Welcome, Antonio Mayo. Here we go.
So, in Microsoft 365, there's four kinds of DLP. There's Cloud DLP, which is DLP for SharePoint Online, OneDrive for Business, Exchange Online, and Teams. There is Endpoint DLP, which enforces DLP, obviously, on your endpoints, on your Windows 10, Windows 11 endpoints. There is DLP for cloud, for non-Microsoft cloud repositories, and that's enforced through Microsoft Defender for Cloud Apps, or what used to be called Cloud App Security. And then the fourth one is on-premise DLP. And on-premise DLP is done through AIP Scanner, effectively. So if you ever used AIP Scanner, it's a server-based tool you install on-prem. It will scan network file shares and on-prem SharePoint for sensitive data, and it can apply sensitivity labels to those files. It can also now enforce DLP rules on those on-prem repositories as well. So that's on-premise DLP.
Can we go back to the third one, which is non-Microsoft data repositories? What would an example of one of those be?
So Dropbox or Box.
That's what I thought, so, Box or Dropbox. Okay. Yeah,
those are the classic examples.
So you can
examples.
Use Defender to basically deploy DLP protections from Defender over Box, Dropbox, or another data repository. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. Defender for Cloud Apps lets you configure DLP policies, and you can do session-based policies. So the way you do that is you configure conditional access policies in Azure AD, or now Entra ID. Those conditional access policies hand over the policy evaluation to Defender for Cloud Apps, and it's a session-based.
Oh, it was going so well.
For a second there, hopefully I'm back.
Oh, there, okay, you're back. You're back. Keep going.
Okay. All right, we'll keep going. Defender for Cloud Apps will take the policy evaluation. It receives the session data, and it actually evaluates data traveling through the session. So, for example, when you are copying a file to Dropbox, it can actually validate if that file has a sensitivity label on it, or if it has a sensitivity label and it should not be copied to Dropbox. So, for example, if your confidential data or restricted data should not go to Dropbox or Box, it can enforce those types of policies. But those are session-based policies. So it is doing it as you're actually performing the action. And then the third one was, that was the third one.
The second one was
Endpoint DLP. Yeah. I want to talk about that one a little bit. That will enforce DLP policies on your endpoints, specifically Windows 10 and Windows 11 desktops.
Not mobile devices?
No, not mobile devices. Okay. And they'll do things like if you want to prevent someone from copying a classified document or a confidential document to a USB drive. You can actually block that, or you can make it, you can audit that, or you can warn on that. Prevent someone from copying confidential data to the clipboard, copying confidential data to a web browser, for example. Mm-hmm. So those are all policies you can enforce on the endpoints. And then the first one, I'm kind of going in reverse order here. The first one is Cloud DLP. So there's a few nuances to Cloud DLP. When you enforce those DLP policies on Exchange Online, it is enforcing them as mail travels through the transport. So you're authoring a mail, you hit send, that email is traveling through the transport. That's when the DLP policy is enforced. It does not enforce it on mail sitting at rest in your mailbox. For SharePoint and OneDrive, it will actually iterate through your files, look for sensitive data within those files, and actually enforce a block on those files or a warning on those files. So it actually is working on data at rest.
Upload, but it's
So DLP policies in SharePoint and OneDrive, it's actually iterating through your files sitting at rest. Now, Sarah, I think the feature that you're talking about is you can enable a feature in M365 where a file is not trusted until a DLP policy runs against it. So you upload a file and no one else can access it. You can't share it until the DLP policy has run against it. And then it kind of enters a different state and then you can share it. I can't remember what that is called. Yeah, there is. It's a PowerShell feature to turn it on, but I can't remember what the name of that feature is.
I think it's also similar to Teams as well. When you, if you copy and paste sensitive information that will violate your DLP, it will block it before it's posted to the recipient's chat.
No, it's similar to that. So with Teams, very specifically, if I paste or type sensitive data into a Teams chat, I hit enter to post that data into the chat. A few seconds later, after the DLP policy runs, because it'll run immediately on those, if it violates a DLP policy, it will actually block it from the recipient. Correct. It doesn't block it until a certain period. It just outright blocks it.
Correct.
So the recipient will see a message saying, you know, the message will be hidden from the recipient and it'll say, you know, this, the posted message violates your DLP policy, something like that. For the person that sent it, they also will get a message saying that it's blocked from the recipient because it violated a DLP policy.
Now, is it the same process for the other three options, like the endpoints and the cloud apps and the on-prem data?
No, it's very different. All four operate very differently. So again, for cloud DLP, we've got kind of a different way of operating in Exchange versus SharePoint and OneDrive versus Teams, right? You heard how those were three different experiences. For endpoint DLP, you have to first onboard your devices, your endpoints to M365. You have to onboard them to endpoint DLP. And then the policy gets downloaded to the endpoint and gets enforced there.
Okay.
And it gets enforced very specifically in those experiences I mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. There's experiences for copying to USB drive, copying to clipboard, copying to a web browser. And there's a few others, but those are the most popular ones that I've seen.
Okay.
Where if I try to do this thing, you get this pop-up telling it violates a DLP policy. Then on Defender for Cloud Apps, that is, again, a session-based policy. So as you're performing that action, it actually gets enforced.
Okay.
And then on-prem DLP, again, the most immature DLP, it has to scan the data. AIP scanner has to scan the data, and then policies can be enforced on it. So four very different experiences with DLP.
So if you take a step back and... what approach would you take to deploy a DLP in one of those four scenarios, either all four or one of them? Like, how do you engage to implement these policies?
So it's a great question. We, for rolling out DLP, we usually recommend a crawl, walk, run approach. So we would focus on one DLP solution at a time. So first of all, like if I think across the DLP solutions, we would probably start with cloud DLP because that tends to be the easiest.
Right.
Then we would move to endpoint.
Yeah.
Then we would probably move to Defender for Cloud Apps. And then the last one, if anyone wants to use it, it would be on-prem DLP. Ideally, we're migrating that.
To think about it in that order.
Yeah. Yeah. And then for cloud, so then if we focus just on cloud, we break that up into a crawl, walk, run. So in crawl, with crawl, the crawl phase in cloud DLP, we'll first start off by identifying what sensitive data types do you want to have DLP policies against, right? We recommend not enabling it for all sensitive data types because you get a lot of false positives, right? Like I've turned on DLP policies for customers on a Friday and over the weekend, they've gotten 30,000 alerts. And what are you going to do with 30,000 alerts? So usually we pick a smaller number of sensitive information types. There might be some custom, they're mostly the built-in ones, and we will configure policies for those. Usually we end up with 10 to 15 policies, and we'll put them in monitor-only mode for the crawl phase. And we'll let that run for a while, and then we'll evaluate the alerts for false positives. Through that evaluation, we'll fine-tune the policies, right? Because there are some levers. You can increase the confidence level. You can adjust what it's looking for. You might make a custom sensitive information type out of a built-in one to provide some additional keywords to look for. So through the crawl phase, we're doing that. We're in monitor mode only. Usually we deploy it to the entire organization, and then we see what the results are. We also, during the crawl phase, we have no impacts to the end user. So the end user doesn't even know that DLP policies are running. It's just the admins that are getting these alerts and saying, okay, where are we getting false positives? Where do we have sensitive data? Then in the walk phase, we fine-tune the policies. We have introduced some user experience impacts. Usually it's policy tips or warnings to let people know that, you know, you might have sensitive data here and you should just be careful where you're sending it or who you're sending it to or this kind of thing. And again, we evaluate for false positives again, we refine the policies, and we also introduce some change management activities so that people know what these policy tips mean and what they should do with them. And then finally, in the run phase, right, we implement those refinements to the policies, and we then start to introduce some blocks, and we might introduce more policies at that point. We also, through that process, we work on how do you operationalize this, right? What do you do with these alerts? Mm-hmm. Who's responsible for looking at them and actioning them? How do you action them? So that's how we roll out cloud DLP.
And hopefully you're warning your users about it, because it almost always happens that you start with the informational tips. And informational tips are actually, Microsoft does them pretty well, right? Yeah, like the traditional ones are kind of the yellow box at the top of your Office file, right? And it's got a little I, a lowercase I in front of it, like it's an informational tip. People panic about these things. They really do. So you have to have some level of communication change adoption, because otherwise they think that they've done something wrong or they can't save their file. And some of them will just close the file and abandon the whole thing altogether without even trying to save. So it's actually more complicated than it sounds to operationalize that and make your employees feel comfortable, even with the informational tips, before you get to the point where they may get an email notification.
Exactly. And if you roll these out in a government scenario, for good or bad, often government employees I've seen have an expectation of privacy, even on their work devices. And as soon as they start to see these kinds of tips, they realize, oh, they're being monitored. So sometimes you do have to have
advanced communications. That's in Canada and in Europe. I don't think in the US we have nearly that.
You could be very right.
We assume they're watching everything.
Yeah. But sometimes it does require advanced communications to people, or sometimes a change in policy. Because I have seen governments that actually have to change their official policies to tell people, we are monitoring what you're doing, before they turn these on. So that also sometimes factors into it.
Now, do you deploy, let's talk cloud only, do you deploy one policy, let's say a policy about whatever type of sensitive data that you want to protect? Do you deploy the same one to all Exchange, OneDrive, SharePoint, and Teams, or do you usually separate one per service based on whatever behavior you want to get out of it?
It's a good question. Most often we deploy a policy that looks for a certain set of data types. So let's say we have one policy for all the built-in US sensitive data types. And there's about five or six of them that are very US focused, plus credit card number we include in there. We usually do one policy there that applies to Exchange, SharePoint, OneDrive, and Teams. So to all four. Sometimes you want a different experience in email versus SharePoint and OneDrive. So sometimes
different organizations may have different security tolerance in those tools. Right.
Correct. So sometimes, depending on that, we'll separate them out into different policies. It doesn't really matter if you do it as one or as multiple, except for the management of those, right? So it depends a little bit on what the organization wants to do and how many policies they want to administer. But yeah, usually we end up with about 10 to 15 policies. The sensitive data types we usually focus on for our work in Canada and the US in particular are the Canadian built-in sensitive data types, the US built-in sensitive data types, and then the technical sensitive data types. So for example, these are things that people often don't think about. SQL database connection strings. What else? Azure secrets, Azure service keys, these types of things, which are all built-in sensitive data types. And you know, your IT department will tell you, yeah, those are actually sensitive. We don't want those to get out. So we look for those as well. Yeah, but that's usually a set on its own. Separate from, you know, your credit card numbers and passport numbers and so on.
But you can also do custom data types as well, right?
You can
define it yourself. If you have a specific pattern in your organizations,
correct,
then you can define it.
Yeah, And that's usually things like if you've got a custom format for an employee number, and let's say that's at the top of all your HR employee files kind of thing. Not a lot of companies have that, but some do. That's a really good thing if you do have a custom format for an employee number, because that's usually something that's,
you know, as long as you don't make sure it's the same custom format or number of character strings as like a day/month/year/year string. Because some companies, I think, don't have a unique number of digits, right?
That's
You're not
right.
Looking for a 15-digit string.
For example. Agreed. Yeah, you really do get down to the format of the sensitive data type. Like people will complain about Microsoft's DLP running into too many false positives. The challenge with it is not Microsoft's DLP. It's that sensitive data type doesn't give you enough details to to identify it definitively. Yeah. It's like
it's kind of like building data models, right?
Exactly. If you look for credit card numbers, those are great because they not only have a certain format and certain letters and or numbers, rather, they also have to follow the LUHN algorithm, L-U-H-N. It's a standard algorithm for defining credit card numbers. So when they're found, it gets evaluated against that algorithm. And if it matches, there's a high confidence it's actually a credit card number. SIN numbers in Canada, right, are social insurance numbers. Those also follow the LUHN algorithm. Social security numbers in the US do not. They don't have an algorithm. They're literally sequential numbers. So, you know, all you have to validate is the pattern and the numbers, and that's it, and keywords around it, and that's it. So, and you've got nothing else to look for. We have often done a lot of enhancing the built-in ones with additional keywords because for some of those, the number of keywords is low.
So, yeah, my favorite is when you have users that say, but I got a false positive and I used a fake credit card number or a test social security number, and they then expect that it will go through. DLP doesn't validate whether it's a real credit card number, a real social security number, a real insurance number. It can't do that, right? So if you're following the same pattern to do testing, then you should expect the same result from it if it was real data, because test data is effectively real data if the pattern matches.
Exactly.
You're going to be blocked, prevented.
That's right.
Right, and that's how we test it. Basically, when you create your test DLP, you're gonna have to use, let's say, you're using some banking information, you're gonna have to use some fake credit card numbers to see if it works or not before you just do the walk.
Now, there are, for credit card numbers specifically, there are sources where you can get real test credit card numbers. So that is worth doing. What's the site? I think eBay, the eBay developer site, has an ability for you to generate test credit card numbers that actually follow the algorithm, but they're not real credit card numbers. So we often rely on that to generate test values. Social security numbers in the US and social insurance numbers, there is no such thing. So usually we'll use fake data, but every once in a while we'll put a real one in just to make sure. We try to minimize that as much as possible, but you know, at some point you need a real test.
Nice, awesome. So if you want to recap, we've talked about DLP for cloud apps, DLP for
endpoints,
thank you, and DLP for Defender for cloud apps,
right?
DLP for on-prem.
Correct. Yeah, so four kinds of DLP, all with different experiences. We usually start in the order that you said. So DLP for cloud, so Exchange, SharePoint, OneDrive, Teams. Then we go DLP for endpoint. Then DLP for cloud apps, which is for those non-Microsoft cloud repositories like Dropbox and Box.
On-prem.
And then on-prem if people want to do it. Rarely do we actually see people want to put DLP on-prem. They'd rather migrate that on-prem data to the cloud.
Yeah, makes sense.
This is a really good overview.
Yeah.
Way to go, Antonio. I don't know, but I think that was about 20 minutes on the dot.
Yeah.
Was it? Cool.
Yeah, I think it was. Well, thank you, Antonio. It was really insightful. Yeah. Good information.
Great.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, everyone. Talk